ಯ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತೀಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯಮದೀರಯೇತ್. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, and to Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and to Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 5, Chapter 4, The Characteristics of Lord Rishabhdev, text number 17. It's a prose, so we don't chant it. Dravya desha kalavayak shadnavartig vividho desho pachitai sarvar api kratubhir yato badesham shatakritva iyaja. Can I just read the translation? Subhas? Lord Rishabhdev performed all kinds of sacrifices 100 times according to the instructions of the Vedic literatures. Thus, he satisfied Lord Vishnu in every respect. All the rituals were enriched by first-class ingredients. They were executed in holy places according to the proper time by priests who were all young and faithful. In this way, Lord Vishnu was worshipped, and the prasad was offered to all the demigods. Thus, the functions and the festivals were all successful. Purport. It is said, Komara acharit pragyo dharman bhagavatan iha. Bhagavatam 7.6.1, teachings of Prahlad to his classmates. A ritual should be performed by young men, even boys. Now, the meaning of that is that from the beginning of life, one should take up Bhagavad Dharma. A ritual should be performed by young men, even boys, at a tender age, in order for the ritual to be performed successfully. From childhood, people should be trained in Vedic culture, especially in devotional service. In this way, one can perfect one's life. A Vaishnav does not disrespect the demigods, but on the other hand, he is not so foolish that he accepts each and every demigod as the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the master of all demigods. Therefore, the demigods are his servants. The Vaishnava accepts them as servants of the Supreme Lord, and he worships them directly. In the Brahma Samhita, the important demigods, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and even the incarnations and expansions of Lord Krishna like Mahavishnu, Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, and all the other Vishnu tattvas, as well as the Shakti tattvas like Durga Devi, are all worshipped by the process of worshipping Govinda with the words, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. A Vaishnav worships the demigods in relation to Govinda, not independently. Vaishnavs are not so foolish that they consider the demigods independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ekale Ishwara Krishna Ar Sabha Vritya. The Supreme Master is Krishna, and all others are his servants. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, Lord Rishabhdev, I'm always amazed when you contemplate Lord Rishabhdev. There's no question that he's Vishnu Tattva. A famous verse in his instructions. Later on, in the next chapter, we'll hear these very critical instructions. Prabhupada was always quoting, Nayam Deho Deha Bhajang Niloke. Don't be like a stool-eating hog and just go after sense gratification. He's preaching to his sons as well as to a whole assembly of Brahmins. We'll see this is almost the end of this chapter, and he comes upon this great assembly of Brahmins. And he goes on, and then within those instructions, very important verses, I think most of us who have ever heard Prabhupada speak in his lectures or on tape, I've heard him quote some of these very important verses. So one of them, he says, Priti in the Yavan Mai Vasudeve Nimuchite Dehi Yogena Tavat. In that verse, he says that unless one has love for me, Vasudev, one cannot get liberation. So there directly he's saying he's Vasudev. Now think about Rishabdev. Later on, after he gives these instructions, and then he's going to retire from, he's the king of the world. He retires, turns over all of the power, the empire, the world, to his son Bharat. And he has 81 of his brothers, I think, who are helping him run the world. And he has these 9 yogendras, who are sannyasis. And they go around and preach, and they'll appear, especially in the 11th canto, to instruct Maharaj Nimi. So then what does Maharaj Rishabdev do? He goes out and he takes sannyas, and he's wandering in the all over as an avadut, right? Dumb and as if he doesn't know anything. And people are disrespecting him in all kinds of ways. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Krishna. Now, just think about that a minute. So back to the present verse. Now here again, he's showing, this is a by example. He's showing a great example here. It's described, he's Krishna, he knows everything, and yet he took the role of a kshatriya, he followed the instructions of the Brahmins, we just heard that in the previous verses, and now he's showing properly how to respect all of the demigods by worshipping Vishnu and worshipping the demigods in relationship to Vishnu. Now sometimes, many of us, I know just as when we hear Prabhupada, or we read in the books, so many arguments against Mayavad philosophy. And I think many of us who began reading that way, in, you know, when they first started coming out, especially the chapter 7 of the Adi Lila, was this tour de force of arguments against the Mayavad philosophy. Prabhupada is quoting the purports of Bhaktisiddhanta and giving so many arguments. So this is fascinating philosophy, but how does it pertain to what we're experiencing on a day-to-day basis? You generally won't find so many Shankara Mayavadis out there in New York, L.A., or something, right? You'll find impersonalists of a sort, but you don't find. But later we understood that these arguments are very important, and also for ourselves to provide a preventative medicine, so to speak, in, that we will not begin to lean toward any impersonal philosophy. And that in general, impersonalism is another word for atheism, in a sense. Atheists believe that the ultimate reality is impersonal, is some kind of impersonal force. And so the idea that the ultimate reality is impersonal really is important for us also to understand. Maybe not all the technical details against Shankaracharya, although we should know that too, but it pertains to us. Now, the other argument that Prabhupada is always giving, Krishna gives, and here we see the same thing in this purport, is that don't worship the demigods separate from Krishna, right? So many of us would say, well, you know, I never really wanted to worship Brahma. I didn't want to worship Shiva. All I know is Krishna. But think about it. It's not just a question of the actual demigods who are running things. Brahma, Shiva, and below them, Indra, Chandra, Surya, all of them. We know that there's this hierarchy. And in the Vedic culture, and in modern India, there's so many people who approach these gods, especially Kali, especially Shiva, especially Lakshmi, especially Ganesh, for material benefits. Right? Now, what did India just have? They just had a big election for a whole month. Right? They were electing their, and then they go, you know, I'm not going to get into politics today. But the idea is that there also they recognize, just as we do here, that there's these powerful personalities that they can vote for. Voting is a kind of worship. It's the same thing. You pay your attention, you like the person, you expect something back, you give your vote, you probably give some money, give some time. This is a kind of worship of a powerful person. And not out of love, not out of devotion, but out of business. Oh, if I vote for this person, I'll get benefited, right? So, and of course, we have the same thing here. So much voting going on, and so much worship, really, of higher personalities who you expect something from. So the basic principle, the underlying principle of this idea, which is reiterated several places in Bhagavad Gita, that I am the supreme and all of these controllers, whatever you get from them is really coming from me. So don't be a fool. Krishna says in the 7th chapter, antavattu palamtesham tadbhavat opamedasam. Opamedasam means little brain substance. In other words, not too smart. And he's speaking about those who develop faith in the gods and worship them, and they get some benefits. It's like he says in the 9th chapter, if you do it properly, you're worshiping me indirectly, you can go to Indraloka, enjoy godly delights, and then come back down again. And so what did you really gain? Nothing. You just wasted a lot of time in illusion. You see. So the same thing is there when we detach, or when in our mind, or when in our heart, we detach some powerful person or some powerful entity from Krishna. The whole idea in Krishna consciousness is to connect everything to Krishna, is to understand the relationship of everything and everyone to Krishna. That no one has any independent power to give benefit or to give punishment or anything. It's all Krishna's shaktis, right? Or expansions. Prabhupada mentions in the purport here, the Brahma Samhita. Have you noticed how the Brahma Samhita goes through the list? And it starts with Krishna. Nice verses about Krishna in Vrindavan herding the cows. The moon locket is swinging. And then it starts to get into a little philosophy. Angani yasa sakalendriya vritti manti. Oh, he's creating everything. All of his senses can work. And then gradually you start to hear about, after some time, the different avatars. Rama, Rama is simply an expansion of Krishna. And then we're getting into Mahavishnu and Garbhadiksha Vishnu. Ganesh is there. Surya is even there. Yatrakshadeva Savita. Indra is mentioned. All the major demigods are mentioned there, all in relation to Krishna. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamahamajami. That's why Brahma Sahita is so significant. Bhaktisiddhanta wrote a commentary, Prabhupada always quoted, right? Because it's a little summary of Bhagavad philosophy right there in Brahma Samhita, very important. So Lord Chaitanya, the two books he brought back from all his travels in South India, Brahma Samhita was one of them, and the other was? Krishna Karnamrita. Yes, so those books have become famous because of Lord Chaitanya's efforts. So the idea here is that the leader in any society is meant to teach, instruct. This is one of the other instructions of Rishabhdev. One should not become a guru or a relative, a mother, a father, a husband, or anybody who's in charge of somebody unless you can teach them and show them how to become liberated from the material energy. In other words, devotional service. So, therefore, Rishabhdev is showing by example here. He himself is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he's overseeing these sacrifices, and not once, but again and again, 100 times. He's showing the proper way in which to respect the gods and Vishnu at the top. So this is really, basic Krishna consciousness, is that before we get into, our personal relationship with Krishna, before we get into rasa and ragatmika and all of these wonderful things that are there in Krishna consciousness, we have to understand that we're the eternal servants of Krishna. Ekale Ishvara Krishna, ar sabha means that not only are we the servants of Krishna, but everyone else is also. And that to approach Krishna properly, we need to make the proper means of approach through those who are more intimate to Krishna, through the spiritual master and the acharyas. They're also servants of Krishna. No one is independent. There's a wonderful line in the Adi Lila chapter 1. Adi Lila chapter 1 deals with the spiritual master, and spiritual masters, actually, to be more precise. And I always remember this, he said one should never think of one's spiritual master without thinking about his relationship to Krishna. So it's not that we, even in relation to the spiritual master, we don't detach. In other words, there's always Krishna there behind. If you want to know who someone is or what they are, you have to know what their consciousness is, isn't it? This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness, that we're not the body, we're the consciousness. So what is that person thinking of? What are their aspirations? What are their desires? That's how you get into their personality. It's like my friend Amala Bhakti was telling me, in developing a character in some novel, it can be a transcendental novel about Krishna, or it could be, something. You need to find out what their inner thoughts are, how they're feeling about things. In other words, what their consciousness is. So the consciousness of the spiritual master is saturated with Krishna. So if you want to know Prabhupada, you have to know, Krishna also, and his relationship to Krishna. And Prabhupada didn't want it any other way. He never, you know, he would always say, don't worship me, worship Krishna. Of course, we know that we should worship the spiritual master as the supreme servitor Godhead, right, of relation to Krishna. So this is a important part of our understanding in the phase of sadhana bhakti. The all-important, foundation of our thought, of our consciousness, has to be in this sambandha, you know, understanding what is our relationship to Krishna. What is Krishna's relationship to this world? You know, when we, in the temple is all designed to help us remember Krishna. So everything here, it's made of the material energy, but it's been spiritualized. But we can't live in the temple, right? Some fortunate devotees of deity worship, they're always in the temple. But then, you know, this is a preaching movement. So you go out and you see everything in relation to Krishna. Everyone is a devotee of Krishna. They just forgot, right? Our job is to remember them, to remind them. That's what preaching is all about. Through book distribution, through Harinam, through prasadam distribution. Just by being there, you know, festivals. There's a festival coming up this weekend. And in honor of the great Acharya Srila Prabhupada. And, of course, Jagannath Rath Yatra will be coming up. Periodic festivals. Contact with those who have forgotten so that we can remind them. And in the process of reminding them in a parampara way, we also become enlivened. We also become Krishnaized. This wasn't my editing. You know, they always made it Krishnaized. But I like that word, Krishnaized. Isn't it? Krishnaized. Prabhupada used that word a lot. And that's really what Krishna consciousness is all about. We want to become Krishnaized, or the iron in the fire, so that we can then Krishnaize others. You know, everyone is ultimately a servant of Krishna. And we become enlivened by being media through which Krishna can Krishnaize them. You know, just become electrified, or you become heated up, on fire, fired up. So this Rishabhdev chapter, of course, we were just thinking about the... when I was in the Festival of Inspiration in New Vrindavan recently, we reviewed that marathon, that famous marathon that took place in May and June, I think it was, of 75. It's become known as the 17-book marathon. But devotees may not remember or know that that important part of that marathon was the fifth canto. There were 15 volumes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 13 volumes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and 2 volumes of the fifth canto. It actually became to 15 books. When they first tried estimating they thought it was 17 books, but it came out to be 15 books. But part of that was this fifth canto, which include these teachings of Rishabhdev. And every canto, you know, when you go through, when you remember the history, it all brought out like a revolution in the consciousness of the devotees, because everyone would read the book as soon as they came out, you know. And you're talking about a worldwide movement. And suddenly, you know, there was Paranjan in the fourth canto. It's a whole different, you know, way of looking at it. It was a very powerful, you know, preaching about the dangers of materialistic attraction, household life. And the fifth canto, Rishabhdev's teachings, you know, Prabhupada was wailing away on that first verse, right? He must have given 10 lectures on that and quoted it like anything. You know, it's such a... it's a wake-up call. It's like it's like someone to take a bucket of ice water and throw it in your face, you know. Whoa! You know, this is actually reality. And, you know, he's saying there, don't waste your life in sense gratification. It's as simple as Nayam Deho Deha Bhajam Niloke Kashtan Kaman. Now, Kashtan means working very hard. You know? You have to work very hard. If you try to build your life on sense gratification, first of all, you're never satisfied. There's never enough, you know. There's always some new experience, you know. And meanwhile, you're burning out your senses. Diseases are coming. It becomes harder and harder to enjoy, right? That's called kashtan, you know. And you're on the level of the stool-eating hogs, you know. The stool-eating hogs are actually enjoying more because they don't know. I mean, that's abominable and, you know, disgusting. But for them, you know, they're in, forgive me, hog heaven, you know. Sure, that's been used before, because they don't know. They just say, "Well, this is life. This is, you know." But eventually, you know, death comes suddenly. It's not really happiness. But just think about it. There's a song by Ayla. Ayla is Pururava,
He also comes in this fifth canto. And he gets bewildered by Urvashi, I think it is, right? And he gets totally obsessed with her. Urvashi, she's a dancing girl from the heavenly planets, you know. And then after some time, she leaves him. And he's totally bereft. And he performs all these sacrifices so he can go to the planet and all this. And finally, at the end, he says, what am I doing? In the 11th canto, it's called the Ila Gita. His another name is Ila. And he says, how am I better? You know, I'm trying to enjoy this body. So, in essence, how am I better than some worm that's, you know, residing in this body trying to enjoy my body? Or when I die, some worm that eats me. Think about it, you know. It's really heavy. And finally, by those strong words, he becomes detached. So sometimes it takes that. Prabhupada was, you know, expert. He was a sadhu. He was cutting. And he was simply quoting from Shastra. You know what I mean? He's simply quoting from Shastra. So, we're about to embark on that. I'm going to be here when we go through these teachings. It's going to be nice. Because these are really central to the whole mood of ISKCON in those days. And it should always be central. This is Bhagavatam. So what's the alternative? You know, it's not like we're like Jesuits or something. You know, it's like, you know, you can't enjoy. Everything is very austere, you know, very grim life, no enjoyment, you know. Sense gratification is sinful, so don't enjoy, right? No, the whole point in this verse from Rishabhdev is, tapo divyam putrakaya in a sattvam shudyed yasma brahma saukyam tvanantam. So it says, rather than let your senses run riot and simply live on the level of the hogs, rather perform tapasya. This human life is meant for austerity. That's the meaning of it. But not just any austerity. It has to be divya. It has to be divine. For the aim of purification of the existence. And he mentions it there. Sattvam shudye. The sattvam is your existence. So the purification means that already within us, we already have this ability to enjoy unlimitedly. This is the birthright of the living entity, Anandamaya Vyasa. We're part and parcel of Krishna. He's always blissful. And therefore, by our nature, should always be blissful. Well, we're not there. Why not? Because of all these impurities in the heart. The lust, the anger, the greed, the anartas. Anartas are divided in three. It's very instructive. I was reading Harinam Chintamani. It starts with this asatrishna, this thirst for the asat, for sense gratification. And, you know, this is among devotees who are struggling to move along in sadhana and progress. If we allow the desire, the thirst for the impermanent sense gratification to overwhelm our consciousness, then the next stage is riddhya daubalyam, weakness of heart. It becomes harder and harder just to perform the routine work of sadhana, what to speak of advancement. And from that, you're very prone to offenses. So the anartas have those three divisions. Asatrishna, riddhya daubalyam, weakness of heart, and offenses of all kinds. Vaishnava offense, guru aparad, seva aparad, nama aparad. Because you're not paying attention. You have weakness of heart. You're prone to be overwhelmed by the modes of nature. So this tapasya is just the 180 degrees different from the sense gratification. It means denying yourself things that you would ordinarily allow. Now, in Krishna consciousness and Vaishnava circles, the tapasya that we're given is minimal compared to what you read about the great yogis or Rishabhdev in the previous ages. You know, the four principles bring you up to the human platform. That's not even tapasya. You know, what to speak of? Oh, get up early in the morning and come see the beautiful form of the deity, chant Hare Krishna, and take prasad. You know, that's austerity. But to do that in this age is very difficult. People are so distracted, they're so attracted to other things. So, then what happens when you become purified? Brahma Saukyam Tvanantam. Here, it's all there in one verse, you know. Then you can begin to taste and ultimately immerse yourself in unending spiritual happiness. Ever-increasing spiritual happiness. There's nothing like that in the material world. Sense gratification is Maya Sukhaya, this little flickering Chapala Sukha. Comes and it goes. And therefore Krishna says, the wise do not take part in it. Adyantavanta koteya nateshu ramide buddha. He says right there in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Is that these pleasures you're getting are the sources of your pain. Now, just see how revolutionary that is in this society. People have experienced it en masse now. All of this high living, you know, I got such a big house, you know, a car, and all of this stuff. And now it's collapsing around their ears, right? Those very pleasures that they were enjoying are the source of their pain. Whereas simple devotees, you know, living in the ashram, getting up, chanting Hare Krishna, enjoying, you know, we're big recession, who cares? Who knows? You know? One sage once said, what is it? When you got nothing to lose. Right? But we don't have nothing. We have Krishna. If you have Krishna, then the external, you know, problems can't hurt you. You know, the duality is there. This is what, you know, Krishna, I was just reading fifth chapter, Bhagavad Gita. This it's basically the same thing, you know, the shochati and the kanchati. To be real sannyasi, is more an attitude in the heart. It's not just a order, you know, spiritual order. It means to be equipoised, nirdvandva, you know, and to be Krishna conscious. If you're Krishna conscious, everything you're doing is for Krishna and is saturated with awareness of that and of Krishna, then you can float along in this world and be peaceful. Even in the greatest difficulty, you remain undisturbed. That's in the sixth chapter. So now these poor people who are in the, you know, immersed in the modes of nature, it's not just losing the money, losing the 401k or the job. It's the fear of it. Even if they still have it, they can't enjoy it anymore because they're afraid they're going to lose it because their neighbor did. You see how it's a mass sinful reaction. America, which is so arrogant and so, you know, lives so beyond its means. Can anyone in the world live, you know, $10 trillion in debt? And we're still the richest, we're the poorest nation in the world. Right here. We're just skating along on this credit card that eventually is going to come up, going to spit it out again. And it's happening around us. So, but if we're schooled, you know, if we've trained in Krishna consciousness, in tapasya, in living very simply, and not, you know, coveting things that we don't need, then we can be happy just with the treasures of Krishna consciousness, right? All of the treasures that have been given to us are spiritual. They don't depend on anything material. Sometimes I think about the social context in which Lord Chaitanya was preaching in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, the Muslims were there. You know, every so often we hear, you know, the conversation with the Qazi, and every so often it comes up, Madhavendra Puri, he took such great risk. Well, why did he take such great risk in going from Vrindavan to Puri to get the sandalwood and then going back? Because there's all these, you know, tax collectors in between. There's all these, you know, these people who are not devotees who are given problem. You know, the Muslims were there and all these different things. So, but you don't hear much about that, you know. It's not like they were worrying about, they're gonna stop our Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is unstoppable. You know, you read that book from Russia, the Salted Bread? Incredible, those devotees. You know, in the greatest difficulty, in the prison, being tortured, you know, they're chanting on dried bread, you know, rounds. And I bet those rounds and those names were chanted with such sincerity and such desperation. Our chanting should be in the mood of desperate supplication for Krishna. That here we are, right? The child for its mother. Have you ever seen a child that's lost its mother? Both of them, the mother and the child, are both mad after, you know, finding each other. But the child is helpless, right? And, you know, there's so many, when we read the Shastra, there's so many prayers like that in the different books we have, Mukunda Mala, Bhagavatam, of just feeling oneself completely helpless without Krishna. Yugayaktam name Shena. The whole world is vacant without Krishna. But in order to have that feeling, we have to feel ourselves completely dependent on Krishna. The problem is we take other shelters. We kind of hedge our bets, you know. And therefore, we can't really feel totally desperate and dependent. Krishna has to save me in the next moment. But when you're put in that situation by circumstance, like the Russians are or were, you know, or other areas that it's so difficult to preach, or even just going out, you know, and being alone, you know, in the ocean of material consciousness, there's an impetus there to pray from the bottom of your heart for protection and for inspiration to be able to present Krishna consciousness. So we just had Lord Lishringadeva's appearance day. Wasn't that his mood? That was Prahlad's mood. Of course, he wasn't even feeling any anxiety. He was totally immersed in Krishna consciousness. But in that mood, he was totally dependent on Krishna and totally protected by Krishna. So that, you know, devotees, the intelligent devotees cultivate that. They look for situations where that's necessary, where you have to call on Krishna and you feel completely helpless. And we see Prabhupada did it. Coming to America was like, it was just like jumping off a cliff. You know, Krishna, save me. I don't know what's going to happen. My health isn't so good. I have no money. Imagine just going to a land. You couldn't speak, you speak the language, but not perfectly. You know, you have no friend, no money. You're elderly. It's in that, absolute mood of dependence on Krishna. And we can see what Krishna gave him. So this Rishabhdev, just the whole personality of Rishabhdev is very inspiring. He's teaching at every stage. He's teaching here in the social, the varnashram situation, how all the different ashrams and varnas should act, especially how the king should act. And then he will retire and perform a severe austerities, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one after another, these great personalities appear in the Bhagavatam. It truly is a pantheon of great acharyas and great avatars and devotees who are there to give us good examples and good instruction. And we should take advantage of it and try to give it as much as possible to others. Even just reading, one of these purports, and we see it can change someone's life. I just, working on the Vyasa Puja book, I realize now that Krishna has really given me this blessing. Every year I get to read so many devotees' appreciations of Prabhupada. And just one that sticks in my head, each year it's like this. These prisoners, this whole prison ministry out there. And not just in America now. They're going to prisoners even in India. Dina Bandhu has a whole prison ministry and everything. But they're so sincere, a lot of these devotees. One letter was there from from Chandrasekhar Prabhu. He's writing, he includes this letter. And the devotee is saying, gratitude, thank you so much. He mentioned Shama Priya, who since passed away since, this letter was written. That you sent these books, and I'm reading this Bhagavad Gita. Now all I want to do, is purify my life. is this guy sitting? It's very difficult, in this atmosphere. You can imagine, some of the dregs of society. And he's just saying, she sent me two books, the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhakti, the Art of Eternal Love. And he's just reading them again and again and appreciating so much. And there's hundreds and hundreds of devotees like that in this prison. So we're all in the prison of this material world. We should also feel that thankful and that appreciative of Prabhupada's books and take shelter of the words of the Acharya, which include the words of, Rishabhdev. And in this way, see everything in its proper perspective. The demigods, powerful personalities here, ourselves, our God brothers, the world itself. And in that basis, we can act properly. Thank you very much for your attention. Any comments or questions on these few points from Rishabhdev? Okay, Prabhu. Yeah. Okay, here comes the mic. No, over here, Prabhu.
Thank you for the very nice class. You mentioned earlier, you were talking about the impersonalists. Mm-hmm. And demigod worshippers. So my question was, within the Vedic literature, it's very clearly explained that Krishna is the Supreme Being. So why is there so many difficulty among people that worship demigods and are Mayavadis and personalists? Is it that they see the scripture and they just totally reject it? Or do they try to construe something from it?
Krishna explains, Kamais Taishta Rita Jnana. That if you allow your mind to be overwhelmed by material desire, it will take away your knowledge, Ritta Jnana. Even though they know, theoretically, Krishna is supreme, that knowledge is diminished, put aside, or distorted so that they can worship some other god to fulfill their material desires. And, you can ask the same thing about devotees. Sometimes you hear, astounding stories, to me anyway, of devotees, all devotees who you know, even spent time with Prabhupada and certainly read the books and knew the philosophy, and yet they got spirited away into some other kind of thing, you know, whether it's Buddhism or impersonalism or just plain sense gratification. If by bad association, and that can be subtly through any kind of media as well as person to person, one can forget the very simple philosophy that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because, you know, the intelligence, or serves the heart, meaning that if you really want to try to enjoy, then you can't do it if you're always thinking, oh, Krishna is in my heart, and the super soul is there, I'm going to be punished. So you find some philosophy, or you distort the philosophy in such a way that, well, it's really not like that, you know? Just like this atheist illusion, right? God doesn't make any sense to us, you know? And they have so many proofs, philosophical or whatever, you know? And they convince each other, andai yatandai, upaniyamana, the blind leading the blind. And then having been completely convinced of that philosophy, they can go out and enjoy and, you know, whatever, you know, with the so-called free conscience until they get smashed by the material energy, you know. So the same thing holds true even on a subtle level like this for the demigods. Or people know, yeah, if I worship Krishna, he's Lord Hari, he'll take everything away. I don't want that. Let me go worship Ganesh, see if I get my business, you know. They know that, theoretically. But it's not real knowledge. It's just the knowledge is diluted and becomes, you know what I mean? To really know that you're the servant of God and that if you don't serve Krishna, you're going to suffer like anything, you can't keep that in your mind and then continue to try to enjoy. You have to bury it. You have to forget it. That's how we forgot. We pull that curtain ourselves over. Originally, everyone can see Krishna. Everyone is enlightened. But by the influence of the material energy, the curtain falls by our own will, and we become agyar. We cannot see adhokshaja. He's beyond the limited senses. And so you can't see him, you can't hear him, you don't want to read Bhagavad Gita. Okay, then you go off and do something else. Form some whole philosophy by which I can do this and do that and enjoy. And you enjoy a little bit. It's really coming from Krishna. It's right back to the demigod thing. And then ultimately you're smashed. It's ultimatism. So that's why even in the Vedic culture, you have all this confusion many times. Tarkopada Shruti over Bhinna, you know, the Shruti seem to be contradicting each other. And you need a Mahajan. You need a guru. You need a real guide who can tell you things, Dharma, real Dharma as it is. So that's the answer. That anyone, at any time, if we become slack, we become enamored of the material energy, all the knowledge that we have can be lost. You know, we can be covered over again. And this life, which we know is real, can seem like a dream. Oh, yeah, I was part of a temple when I was 21. Now I'm 58, and, you know, I'm part of did this other thing now. And that was my youthful stage. It's like a little passing fancy I had, you know. It's crazy. From our point of view, you can see how crazy it is, but that's Maya for you. She'll make you think that reality is a dream and a dream is a reality. That's the whole point. Anyone else? Om Kabu.
Yeah, thank you for the nice class, Prabhu. You made many nice points. The first point I appreciated was about talking about elections. Ah. That was a whole other aspect that I'd never considered, but I really appreciate. The other point, which I noticed, it came up many times throughout your lecture, was about the need to, you know, share these teachings with other people. You know, it's very pertinent, actually, because these people, they're just floundering in the ocean of Maya, and they have no clue as to how to even start trying to get out, even though they really want to, but they just don't even know where to begin. You know, it's like they don't know whether to turn left or to turn right or what to do. You know, like recently, Bhrigu Padipuru and myself and some of the bhaktas have been going out to distribute books in South Central and Watts. And, you know, these people are just like, they're really nice people. You know, in their heart, that there's a lot of culture there. You know, they really care about and look after each other. Mm-hmm. even though they may be very entangled in Maya. Like yesterday I was talking to one guy, and you know, very sincere person, he really wants to turn his life around, but just because of his karma, you know, and because of his, you know, material desires, you know, he was telling me that he just got out of jail. He was in jail for like 4 or 5 years because he came home after a hard day of work, had a few beers, and then when he came home, you know, there his wife was in bed with some other man.
Great.
So without even thinking, he just went and got a knife. Next thing you know, he's in jail for several years. You know, but when I showed him the books, he was so interested. He was really enthusiastic, and his son was there also, an 11-year-old son. You know, and so they took all the books and they started reading it right there on the spot. You know, and you don't find this, you know, people actually reading the books on the spot with such enthusiasm.
Yeah.
In other places, you know, I met another man walking on the street.
But I think the point you're making is that, like Brigapati was making yesterday.
Yeah.
You see them doing that, but somehow they can't bring themselves to really take up the process.
Although, you know, there are other people that do take up the process. You know, like there's this one Mr. Lee. He's there in South Central. He's a bhakta. He doesn't necessarily come to the temple very often, but he distributes Prabhupada's books there in his shop.
All right, we're going to have to end soon, but do you have like a conclusion of all this?
So the conclusion, the main point is that we have to get out there. You know, we have to share these teachings with other people. It's not enough simply to, you know, enjoy this nice atmosphere here in the temple. You know, we have to take on some austerity, get out there, share these teachings for the benefit of all society.
This was certainly Prabhupada's mood, and he pushed so hard for this. And this is really, you know, a lot of these offerings, they're asking, how can we ever repay you? You know, and of course, everyone knows the answer. You know, we can't, but the only way we can try is to try to share to preach like me. Prabhupada said, if you want to please me, then preach like me. So no one can preach like Prabhupada. Prabhupada is, you know, so high, but he showed by example to really taking the risk, never really, you know, even when he could have, and you know, very devotees were saying, please, Prabhupada, do that, just to kick back a little bit, stay in one spot and write. He always went out. He always pushed on for the benefit of his disciples, and to inspire them also to go out and do the same for others. So that example is eternally there, and we have to embrace that and push ourselves. Sivas will have the last word. Go ahead, Prabhupada.
Thank you for a very nice class.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
You know, just hearing you speak and Omkar and Prabhu, and it just kind of, and you're just the last point you made about Prabhupada, it appears that we need to develop a certain kind of consciousness. Like when Prabhupada was preaching, he actually really wanted to make a devotee.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want to just give you the philosophy, then he'd go home.
Right.
But he really wanted to speak to you in such a way that you would take up the process of Krishna consciousness. So, you know, we're always asking to make devotees, so maybe we should all take up the process of really wanting someone to be a devotee.
Exactly.
You know, to really be sincere and take up Krishna consciousness. And then maybe we can find some real quality people. You know, there's some that don't really, you know, they just can't do it, which
right.
is understandable. But if we have a mentality that we really want to make a devotee, so when we speak to someone, that's what we speak to them about.
And not only speak, but they feel that.
Yeah,
you know,
they
feel that
you.
that you know, you're welcoming them into like a family.
Yeah.
And they feel your emotion. You know.
And we should have some discrimination. You know,
yeah.
We need to have that
right.
discrimination power also. Not that you just take someone who's just
right,
completely...
Right. Exactly. You have to use your intelligence.
And give them all the feeling you got. Or
right. In other words, it's those people, you know, their level that they can commit to, you know, take some prasadam or whatever, you know. But those who, yeah, the intelligent, you know, I mean, Prabhupada was always eager to preaching in the universities and get young, intelligent people, you know, to join, because that's what's going to carry it on. That's what happened.
Then in the beginning, we kind of took that up. We invited that movement.
Right.
Prabhupada.
Right.
Really make you a devotee.
And that's how the movement grew.
Yes, sir.
Grew. I think we have to end. All glories to the Prabhupada.
I'd just like to make one last announcement that tonight I'll be celebrating my Guru Maharaj's Vyasa Puja. Everyone is welcome to come if they'd like. It's at 3709 Watseka Avenue, apartment number 209. It's Suresh's house. Tonight at 7 p.m.